Good afternoon, everyone. We're back for the oral argument in the Pioneer Natural Resources case. For this oral argument, we're pleased to be joined by Chief Judge Loeb, and so we're glad to have him with us on this case. And are you Ms. Spaulding?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Okay.
Before you were in the courtroom, I went through the general procedures for the oral arguments. Are you familiar with them?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. I've read your paper.
Okay. Okay, good. The only other thing I would add is to just double check to make sure that if you have a cell phone that it's turned off.
Left it at the office.
Okay, good. We have had instances where lawyers arguing their cases have had their cell phones go off during oral arguments, believe it or not. So, okay, with that having been said, we're ready to hear the oral argument in Pioneer Natural Resources versus the Department of Revenue.
May it please the court, I'm Robert Dodd, registration number 27869, appearing on behalf of the Department of Revenue in this case. So this case concerns the scope of the Enterprise Zone Manufacturing Machinery Exemption in Colorado. And because exemptions are allowed only as a matter of legislative grace and will only be granted where clearly provided for by a law, the only way Pioneer can win this case is by convincing the court that its interpretation of the statute is the only reasonable interpretation of the law.
Which statute are you talking about, the Enterprise Zone statute?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that in the course of the briefing and the decision below, the Enterprise Zone exemption statute and the statewide machinery exemption statute have been read in parallel, since the statewide exemption statute will control the administration of the Enterprise Zone exemption statute. So after an administrative hearing and arguments on the law, the deputy director of the department concluded that Pioneer's gas gathering pipe and fittings did not qualify for exemption under either the general or the enterprise zone manufacturing machinery exemption. And he based that conclusion on the notion that the pipe is not used directly in the extraction process, that it is used primarily to transport the gas, and that there's no evidence that the pipe is involved in processing or refining the gas. Well, we contend that that's a reasonable interpretation of law and that it should be followed by the court. Now, in cross motions for summary judgment, of course, the district court reversed, and we contend that the district court committed three fundamental errors. First, that it failed to apply the plain language of the statewide as well as the enterprise zone machinery exemption statutes. But even assuming any doubt remained about how to interpret those statutes, the court failed to apply the well-established principle in taxation that all doubts must be construed against exemption and in favor of taxation. And in fact, in the order, the judge does not appear to recognize that principle. And then finally, to the extent any ambiguity might remain in the interpretation of the statutes, the legislative history would resolve that in favor of taxation in this case and against the exemption.
Can I ask a question about ambiguity for a minute? As I read the briefs, both sides seem to be saying that you can resolve this case on a plain language basis. Now, obviously, you come to different conclusions. Is that your understanding of kind of where the arguments play out?
Yes, Your Honor. We do believe that the plain language of the enterprise zone exemption statute is sufficient to resolve this case in this respect. The statute provides that in addition to the general exemption statute, which is a sort of a conceptual definition of manufacturing, that is, if something alters a raw material into a new product, you know, article or commodity, that's manufacturing. So what the district court got right here was to say, clearly this is not manufacturing in the general sense and the statewide exemption statute, because Otherwise, these activities that are named in the, you know, in the expanded definition, the enterprise zone, there'd be no purpose for that. So these are not included in the statewide. So the question is, are they included as a part of the expanded enterprise zone definition of manufacturing, which includes certain named specific activities? Keeping in mind, of course, that the purpose of the enterprise zone statute would be to further incentivize businesses to locate and to invest in those geographically defined areas. You must keep in mind, though, that it's not a tax-free zone. It's a targeted incentive that the enterprise zone exemption provides, and they name the activities including refining, blasting, exploring, mining, and for our purposes here, we have processing and extraction. And Pioneer does have processing and extraction sites within the enterprise zones. Granted, those are exempt. Their purchases for those purposes, those operations, will be exempt from sales tax. So what this case comes to is the question of whether gathering, which is an activity not named in the enterprise zone statute as being exempt, should nevertheless be included. And that's where we believe the district court erred as a matter of law on the plain language of the statute.
Mr. Dodd, let me ask you about that, because I know you mentioned in your brief as well that the word gathering doesn't appear in the statute, but nevertheless, Section 39-3106 does say, or otherwise extracting from the earth, et cetera, et cetera. So isn't that phrase broad in its scope?
Otherwise, extracting from the earth, I think, Your Honor, could be construed certainly as a broad statement about extraction. But I think what's critical here is that extraction is a particular activity and is used in the industry and in the law. It's generally considered separate from gathering. For instance, I think in the Saturn Oil case, it talks about production being the act of bringing forth the material from the earth, and gathering is the act of collecting the gas after it's been brought forth from the earth. And so it recognizes a distinction there. And then in statute, for instance, in the severance tax code, we see gathering defined as a separate activity, for instance, from transportation. So I think we know that the legislature knows how to employ and define gathering should it wish to do so. But those are two pretty prominent activities that are left out of the enterprise zone statute, both gathering and transportation. So we believe that the statute itself, by not listing them, clearly excludes them. But if any doubt were to remain on that point, we believe that the general rule of construction in tax cases, which is, I guess you would say, it's reversed here, so that the presumption is in favor of taxation in an exemption case, and it's again the presumption against the exemption that also comes into play. And while many cases that may be, we see it in play, we see the language, it's not often perhaps dispositive. But here we believe it is dispositive, because to the extent reasonable arguments might be made on either side, that presumption requires us to hold in favor of taxation. A panel of this court recently drew the same conclusion in an exemption case in the City of Golden versus Aramark, in which it concluded that while both sides made reasonable arguments, that required denial of the exemption.
But why would it be dispositive as opposed to just telling us, well, we've got to go on and look at legislative history and all the other kinds of things that some of the rules of construction tell us to look at if there's some doubt?
Your Honor, it's a reasonable question certainly to ask which rule of construction might be employed first.
Right.
I don't think I am aware of a clear rule about which should be employed first. I know that we see in every exemption case the rule that presumption is against exemption, the burden on the taxpayer. But of course, Your Honor is correct that in cases of statutory ambiguity where we look to legislative history, that's also clearly a factor. However, in this case, we believe they point to the same direction, because the General Assembly first drafted or we see the bills, I think it was 91-131, Senate bill, was drafted so that it included language that said, I'll be specific, shall, the definition of manufacturing shall include, and then had the words, but need not be limited to. And then in further revision of the bill, that language was stricken so that it simply said, shall include. And then it listed the specific activities. So we believe that the clear intent of the legislature in removing that language was to not leave an open-ended expansion of the exemption.
Well, how does that square with cases that we have that say the word include followed by a list of items is not all-encompassing?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the way it's employed here is it's important to look particularly at this language, which says that in addition to the definition of manufacturing in the statewide exemption statute, which of course it's a conceptual definition, then it says manufacturing shall include. So it would be different, I believe, and I think Your Honor's point would be correct if there were a simple, if it just simply said manufacturing shall include these activities and left it at that without, so to speak, putting a period on it, leaving it open-ended. But the purpose of using the word here is not to leave it open-ended. It's to say that it is in addition to and shall include. In other words, it's an overlap to the statewide definition so that it's in addition to that definition and also includes these named activities which otherwise wouldn't meet that definition.
Well, how do we know if the 1991 legislative history that you adverted to a few minutes ago expressed the legislative intent that you're suggesting as opposed to somebody deciding to take out the words including but not limited to just as a grammatical phrase that was unnecessary?
Your Honor, I think that there is always a certain amount of interpretation when you're reading the legislative history. That is true. I can't portray total certainty in what might have been in the mind of the General Assembly at that point. But I believe we cited and referenced in the brief language that in order to defeat the maxim at times, in order to defeat the maxim that a certain list of activities, I won't try and say it in Latin, including certain things excludes others, sometimes it's necessary to have the language shall include, you know, but need not be limited to. So here I think we revert back to the basic rule that when we have a list of certain named operations, that these are the only ones that they intended to include. I see my time is nearly expired. If the court has no further questions at this time, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Actually, Mr. Dodden, I know you want to save some time, but I do have a question that's been confusing me a little bit. Your argument today focused almost exclusively on the definition of manufacturing in the general statute and the additional definition of manufacturing in the enterprise zone statute. And I get what the issue is. The briefs, both briefs and the trial court's order, talk a lot about subsection D of section 09 on direct use. And I'm trying to figure out why that's so important here. Isn't it just really the definition of manufacturing that's going to drive this case? Help me through that.
I believe it is correct that the definition of manufacturing is what drives the case, Your Honor, in the sense that district court agreed section 709 statewide exemption does not apply. So all we have left is the enterprise zone exemption and the specific activities named. But the fundamental or critical error I believe the district court committed was in recognizing that, you got that far correctly, but I believe erred when it read that language in the second sentence of subsection D, that machinery used during the manufacturing process to move material from one direction, direct production step to another in a continuous flow is included. It was for that reason that the court said, well, this looks like continuous flow to me, and so I'm going to say that it's included. But the error is that he used that language, and as a result, it conflicts with the exclusive list of activities in section 106. And as a brief example, I should say this. to the extent that that language has any application in 106 at all, it might, for instance, apply on a processing site or an extraction site where, for instance, there are many different types of equipment, of pipes, of valves, tanks, and in a processing station, you have to move it from one step to another. All that's included. In other words, the department isn't parsing that out. But basically, it's given as an exemption as a piece, as part of processing. So to the extent that continuous flow language would apply there, it would allow basically the entire extraction site, the well pad site, and that equipment, or it's 9 or now 10, I believe, processing facilities, which are about half a football field in size, according to the record. So these are substantial operations, but we believe the thing that connects them is the gathering, and that's not named and not included.
Thank you. I'm sorry to cut into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Dodd, in light of the questions that we've had, we'll give you an extra 2 minutes for rebuttal after Ms. Spaulding is done.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Karen Spaulding appearing on behalf of Pioneer, the appellee in this case. Pioneer is here today to ask you to affirm the district court's holding that the gas gathering pipeline qualifies for the exemption under the enterprise zone exemption because it is specifically used in extracting natural gas or CBM gas from the well. Taxation is the rule and the exemption is the exception. In this case, the district court looked at the undisputed facts in this case and Pioneer met its burden of proof that it is entitled to this exemption. There was some question on the ambiguity. I don't think there's any ambiguity. I think you can read the statutes, give them their plain meaning, and come to the just and reasonable result that the district court did in this case.
Ms. Spaulding, just before you continue, I'd just like to ask you a quick question about the language about a presumption and against an exemption. Obviously, that's not an irrebuttable presumption. So what is your burden in showing that the exemption applies here? Is it just by a preponderance of the evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it's by a preponderance of the evidence, and I believe that we have done that in the undisputed facts that are set forth in the record at 193 through 195. So this is clearly an enterprise zone facility. There's no dispute about that. And the manufacturing definition, as you pointed out, is listed at 106.1b, and it includes refining, blasting, processing, various different things, including extracting natural resources from the earth. So the question here is whether the gas gathering pipeline is used in extraction. The fact that gathering is not listed in the statute is irrelevant in this particular case, given the undisputed facts. You also need to look at 106.1a. 106.1a has the four requirements for when you get the sales tax exemption. And it only needs to be used solely and exclusively in an enterprise zone. That's contrary to 709, which is the statewide exemption, which has a different test that must be directly and predominantly used. That is not the test in the enterprise zone exemption. It just needs to be used in the enterprise zone exemption.
So, Ms. Spaulding, if I may interrupt you again, it sounded like you were just dismissing out of hand Mr. Dodd's argument that the language in the statute about shall include various things, including extracting something from the ground, is irrelevant. Did I understand you to say that correctly?
Well, I think the fact that gathering is not listed in the statute in 106.1b is irrelevant to the facts of this particular case.
And why is that?
That is because in this particular case, the gas gathering line, as the court found in its order at page 3, the gas gathering line manages the line pressure. So the extraction process is very sensitive to the line pressure in the gathering system.
But as I understand Mr. Dodd's argument, he's saying that when the legislature passed section 106 regarding enterprise zones, it specified various items that would now be added to what would be considered manufacturing. And according to Mr. Dodd's argument, extraction is considered, but not transportation and not gathering.
Okay.
So and could you respond to that part of his argument?
Yes, please? What I'm trying to say is that the gas gathering line is actually used in extracting the natural gas from the earth. And because it's used in extracting the natural gas from the earth under 106(1)(b), it is used in manufacturing and it is exempt. The gas gathering pipe, in conventional, if I can just explain, in conventional gas, the gas comes up the production casing. It comes from a very low level with a high pressure. In CBM gas production, which is what we have here, we have a totally different experience. You have to get the water off the coal, and that comes up the production casing. And then because of the low line pressure, which is at 3 psi pounds per square inch, it's then able to extract the CBM gas off the coal beds that are in the ground. It comes up in between the production casing where the water comes up and the outer casing.
How is that any different from the separators that were talked about in the Noble Energy case where the court said the separators aren't exempt?
Yes, Your Honor. The Noble case was a statewide exemption case and not an enterprise zone exemption case. And the that was a conventional gas processing facility. But the gas was different. It came up. The separators are not actually extracting the gas. All the separators are doing are taking the water and the gas and peeling it off in various different places. The gas gathering pipeline in this particular case is actually in use in extracting the coal bed methane gas from the ground. And so that's why it's different.
So does that mean that from your perspective, if we were to affirm Judge McGahey that our opinion would apply only to CBM as opposed to conventional natural gas?
Well, it would apply. We only argued about the CBM gas, and so I'm not saying that it wouldn't necessarily apply to conventional, but I'm just giving you the distinction in general terms and why under the specific facts of this case in coal bed methane production. Another example, Pioneer spent $3 million to put larger diameter pipe connecting 400 wells. And when it did that, it reduced the pounds per square inch, the pressure by 1 pound per square inch, and it increased production by 1.8 million cubic feet a day.
So if I understand what you're saying, at least for CBM, then the gathering is actually part of the extracting process. Is that correct?
The gathering pipeline is used in the extraction process. That is correct.
Okay.
It is part of the extraction process. It's therefore exempt under 106(1)(b). It's used in an enterprise zone to manufacture CBM gas for sale or profit, and therefore it is exempt under the enterprise zone exemption.
Is there any dispute in this case about whether CBM gas is tangible personal property?
No, there is not, Your Honor. There's no dispute except for the use issue, use and manufacturing. It is for sale or profit, and it's tangible personal property.
Thank you.
And I think one of the cases supports that as well, that we've cited in our materials. So as you pointed out, Judge Loeb, the court could have just stopped there and said that the gathering pipeline was used in extraction and is exempt under 106(1)(b) and 106(1)(a). The court did go farther and looked at 709. I think in looking together at the statutes, the court also decided that because the gathering pipeline actually, you know, takes the gas to the compressor stations, that it's goes between the two production steps, the wellhead and the compressor stations, and it moves it in a continuous flow, and said, just to add icing to the cake, well, it's also exempt under 709(1)(b) as well. The department argues that there is no ability to use that because there's no manufacturing process going on. But I think if you look at the facts in this case, the manufacturing process is in fact the gathering line extracting the CBM gas. And you also have cases that say the manufacturing process is not complete until the product is put out there for sale. The public service company case is the electricity case where the transporters, the transformers that stepped down the electricity right before it was sold to customers, the court decided that was necessary machinery in the manufacturing process. The Perry
But even to get to that point, don't you have to have a definition of what manufacturing itself is?
Manufacturing is under 106(1)(b), and that manufacturing is extracting, at least in the gas gathering line situation, but the department also permits the exemption for the wellhead machinery and the compression machinery, which connects the gas gathering line. So the manufacturing process, under 106(1A), you do not get to use the exemption, or you don't get the exemption until the product, your tangible personal product, is able to be sold at the market. So the manufacturing process isn't complete until that point in time. The other point I'd like, did that answer your question?
Well, let me pick up on that a little bit. What if hypothetically we didn't have what you say the gathering equipment does here? We're talking about pure transportation, just moving it from one place to another. That's not covered by 106, is it, in terms of the definition of manufacturing itself?
That's correct, Your Honor. Transportation, when the gas goes from the compressor station to the interstate pipeline for sale, that is a transportation pipe. It's a different pipe, and that is not exempt, and we did not ask, Pioneer did not ask for the exemption on that transportation pipe.
And so as I understand what you're saying, the thing that makes your case different, in your view, is the fact that these gathering pipelines are, in your view, part of extracting the CBM gas out of the ground.
That's
right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
And the undisputed facts in the record do support that at pages 193 to 195. The other point I would like to make for you is that the department, in its opening brief at 12 and its reply at 9, talks about the gathering pipeline must be directly and predominantly used in manufacturing. That's the standard under the statewide exemption under 709(1A) Roman numeral 2. And under 106(1A), that is not applicable. It's just use in, exclusively used in an enterprise zone. So the 106(1A) makes the 709(1A)(2) irrelevant because 106(1B) says specifically, to the extent that there are any inconsistencies in the two statutes, 106 prevails over 709, even though 709 does cover the administrative administration of the enterprise zone exemption. Unless the court has any additional questions, I will just conclude by saying, point you to the Petron case, which says in construing tax statutes, court will not deprive the taxpayer of a legitimate favorable construction. And I think in this case, there is no ambiguity, plain meaning of the statutes when they're read together. And given the facts in this case, the district court was correct in finding that the gas gathering pipeline is used in extraction, and that is exempt under 106(1B) and 106(1A). And Pioneer is entitled to the sales tax exemption in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Spaulding. Mr. Dodd, you have 2 minutes and 24 seconds now for your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please the court? The notion that the standard is that to not deprive the taxpayer of a legitimate reasonable construction is exactly the wrong standard here. The question is, if there are two different reasonable arguments to be made, it is in favor of taxation that the court must rule and against exemption. That is the wrong standard. Another very critical legal argument, a legal error that the plaintiff has made here is to argue that the directly and predominantly requirement does not apply. The Craig Computer, I believe, cited in any case, that case clearly held that the general exemption statute controls the administration of the enterprise zone statute to the extent they do not conflict. So the directly and predominantly standard is not a location standard. That is to be how they're to be used in manufacturing, whereas solely exclusively in an enterprise zone, that's a location standard. It still must be used directly and predominantly in manufacturing. And if we want to say manufacturing is processing or extraction, that should be the predominant use. District Court didn't even address that, and that is clear legal error.
Well, what I understood from Ms. Spaulding's argument was that the gathering was part of the extraction process. Do you disagree with that?
I do understand that that is their argument. I do not agree with that, and I think that's a conflation, really, of the two processes. gathering is clearly distinct. The legislature knows how to define it as a separate matter, as it, well as it does transportation, and it did not include that here. Basically, in the brief, what we see is a couple of statements that I think are very telling and show the weakness of their argument. Now, for instance, on page 23 of the brief, Appley says that cites the importance of gathering and bringing the natural gas to market, and argues that the gathering pipe is interrelated to the extraction site. But those are not the standards. It's not a, I mean, if the legislature wanted to say any activity related to extraction, it could have said that, but it did not. It provided specific activities, and they are distinct, and we ask the court reverse the judgment of the district court and enter judgment for the Department of Revenue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dodd. Thank you again, Ms. Spaulding. We appreciate both of your fine arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.